The housing market is hot. There are three times more buyers than sellers. It's more important now than ever to make sure you have your financing in place before you even find the house. Get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert LLC.
Here we go on our Tuesday, and it's a big one where we got the intersection of college football tonight. Football every night, as we said last week, all the way until November 20th, and the start of the college basketball season tonight. Including number 11, Auburn in action, Alabama in action, UAB in action, and some big games nationally. But we start with what we saw on Monday Night Football. A lot of tears in Dallas, and I'm not just talking about the Jason Witten tribute video, which was moving to see Jason Witten get honored there last night. The Cowboys, America's team, not very good. Titans get them last night. You heard the game here on Jocks, 28-14. And then immediately afterwards, Jerry Jones says, no coaching change in the middle of the season. We're not going to do that in midseason.
Well, you know, he's only done it one time, and that was back in 1989. It was 2010. Wade Phillips started the season at 1-7, and that's where we get Jason Garrett. And I just think Jerry Jones is so comfortable right now with Jason Garrett because he loves to control. And to me, every year it's a 50-50 because it seems, outside of 2 years ago, that every year, Jason Garrett, based on where this team is, probably doesn't deserve to return as head coach. But on the other side, you always know that Jerry Jones wants to be able to control this guy.
And by and large, you're in a conference where like 9 or 10 wins can win your division. And I mean, they're a couple back of the Redskins, but they're not out of this, even at 3-5. I mean, I think if they were in a division, for instance, like my team with the Patriots, who are always a 12 or 13 win team, this would get more magnified, but it seems like Jason Garrett will go into Thanksgiving and even into December right in the thick of this division race, and it almost covers up the fact that they are such an average franchise.
If they get to 9, you're saying they got a chance.
Got a shot.
Nine's their number.
In that division, yeah. I mean, there's no Chiefs in that division. There's no Saints in that division. There's no Rams or Patriots in that division. That's a division that is very mediocre football a lot of the time.
Yeah, as bad as they've been this year at times, I mean, it just seems like it's the Eagles' division, and they're still a game back of the Redskins right now. So, I mean, there is no one you would trust in that division. Obviously, New York's already out of it, sitting at 1-7, but Dallas at 3-5, Washington at 5-3, with Philadelphia sandwiched between them at 4-4. It just seems inevitable Philadelphia will find a way to win that division.
The offense, very mediocre last night. We'll talk more about that in a second, but here is Jerry Jones afterwards. He's the only owner I know that gives a news conference after every game. And he's there surrounded by microphones, and he did not want to hear any coaching criticism after the game last night.
The coaching issue here was they did a heck of a job. The other coaches did a heck of a job out there tonight. Give them their due.
I thought Amari Cooper, for his first game, made a big impact. I thought he helped them push the ball down the field a little bit. He only had 58 yards, but he gave them a weapon.
Well, and I think that's the difference. I think you, at least defensively, Mike Vrabel in Tennessee were aware of Amari Cooper. And it looked early on he was going to have a huge impact on last night's game. And look, I mean, really the big first mistake for the Dallas Cowboys was when Dak was trying to go to Amari and forced one into double coverage. And, you know, if you actually find a way to execute there, you're up 14-0. And I think it's a different game.
It was amazing Tennessee was even in that game. They were a replay away from fumbling their first three possessions. Wow. I mean, you don't ever see that, man. Three straight possessions to start the game with a fumble, and the replay got overturned. They kept the ball, and that kind of flipped the game there. But Dallas was only, even with two fumbles, was only up 7-0.
Well, you can't miss 38-yard field goals in the NFL.
No. I mean, it's bad enough in college, but in the NFL, points are at such premium you can't do it.
A lot of kicking changes we've seen in the NFL, though.
Well, but see, they're the ones that cut a really dependable kicker over money at the start of the year.
Dan Bailey was so good, and that's just one of those guys. I mean, kickers to me are worth their weight in gold. You know, going back to, you know, the big matchup this weekend, you know, Lutz hitting that 54-yarder to break the tie.
Yeah.
You know, that was really the big swing in that Saints-Rams game. So, I mean, if you've got a guy that you feel really good inside of 50, which in the NFL you should, those guys are worth millions and millions of dollars.
We've got a great NFL game when it cranks back up on Thursday. Cam Newton, who will not win the MVP most likely this year, but he's having MVP-like numbers again.
He could.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's going to be a lot of
Drew Brees
at the end of his career.
Yep.
Going to be a lot of Rams. Going to be a lot of Rams despite the loss this weekend. But Cam's in the mix. He's playing better than he did during the MVP season.
Scary team, right now, man.
Yeah, they're getting good.
We talked about that a little bit yesterday, that you probably can go three, maybe even four deep before you get to an AFC team.
I will say this, though. Listen, I don't have them all committed to memory, but to me, this is probably the best Thursday night NFL game we've ever had, right?
Well, it's funny because you brought up last week one of the worst, if not the worst we've ever had.
But
you
it had
go
to
immediately
be.
To one of the best we've ever seen. But yeah, I mean, you know, I felt this Carolina team the last couple of weeks was really, really creeping up. And I think when you go one through three right now, I think you would go Saints, Rams, Carolina, and then you probably hit Kansas City or New England to round out a top five with those two. But right now, Carolina's playing that good. No one's talking about them. You know, running around New Orleans this past weekend, everybody was talking about, oh, you'll see this rematch in January. I'm not so sure. Whoever draws Carolina in that divisional game, good luck.
They got to take care of Cam Newton, who's playing so well, and they've got so many weapons around him. So that's Thursday night. We got college football tonight with a little action, but it's also the start of college basketball season. And we love college basketball on this show. Love it, love it, love it. We love the NBA on this show. But this day doesn't bring with it the same kind of excitement that opening day of college football, opening day of the NFL, the first major in golf, even opening day baseball, this day doesn't bring the same kind of excitement. Why, Brent?
Because these feel like exhibition games tonight, honestly.
No, that's not why. It's because football's over. It's at the end.
Well, these do feel like exhibition games tonight.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
No, but that's why.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, if these were standalone games in January between, you know, college football, or actually the end of college football and what you've got with the NFL postseason, then it would feel a lot bigger than it is right now. But, I mean, this is not even end of November. This is early November.
Yeah, this is the beginning, earliest beginning ever, and they're starting on a Tuesday night to avoid football. So we got great basketball tonight.
To avoid football, and they'll announce the playoff standings at halftime of the early game.
Yeah, in the middle. They got Michigan State, Kansas first at 6. Then they'll do the selection committee process in between games live from there in Indianapolis. And then after that, they've got Duke and Kentucky at 8:30. 8:35 is when they're expected to tip. How much of the end of that one will you two see?
Very little. I mean, there's just no meaning in that game.
Yeah. Now, back to what you mean there is, unlike college football.
Yeah. I mean, even college football now with the playoff, those first week games aren't packed with meaning. I mean, you can lose one of those first week games. In theory, Alabama could have lost to Louisville and still be in the top four tonight. Auburn could have lost to Washington, and had they not lost another game, would just be just fine. So we have watered down the football ones a little bit with the playoff, but the basketball ones have never mattered. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm glad we're getting them because it's name versus name, and this is a lot of – we don't get this a lot in college football. But, I mean, when you get the Michigan States, Dukes, Kentuckys of the world, and Kansas
– all in one place?
All in one place. I mean, that's significant. We don't get this in football, but – the games just don't really have a ton of meaning.
But when you go to that late game, when you go Duke and you go Kentucky, you're talking about the nation's two top recruiting classes.
Yeah.
So where they are right now in November and where they will be in March, it's just night and day.
Yeah, see, that's the whole thing. You'll watch this game, and those two teams will be totally different by the time the meaningful games are played.
Yeah, for those that don't know, they'll play a lot of true freshmen tonight, fresh out of high school. And by the time we get to March, they'll be seasoned veterans.
That's right. They'll be ready for the NBA.
Yeah, ready for the NBA one and done. So
you know,
that's what you'll get tonight.
Between these two 12 McDonald's All-American alums in this one game with Duke and Kentucky.
Wow. It'll be fun to watch. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to poo-poo it. I know it sounds like I am, but my point is the games just aren't really packed with meaning. They are fun to watch, but the coaches will even be working on rotations and things like that. I mean, this is the loser of the either of these games could still get a one seed in the NCAA tournament.
Locally, number 11 Auburn starts at Auburn Arena. It'll be fun to see what that team is going to look like now with the big man running the floor with the speed and the pace that they played last year. Bruce Pearl told us over and over and over that that it wouldn't change.
Yeah.
It wouldn't change the way they play.
Yep. I mean, he has maintained that on our show. Anywhere he's talked is that the having a big guy like Austin Wiley will not slow down their pace at all. And, I mean, that'll be fun to see. Samir Dowdy is going to play now, so that'll be you know, interesting to see what they look like with him. So, or at least he's likely to play, is what Bruce Pearl has said.
South Alabama's the opponent tonight. South Alabama, Auburn, 8 o'clock on the SEC Network. You'll hear that on our sister station, 99.5, later on tonight.
The problem is, Wiley, though, is hurt, so we'll just have to see, you know, when he gets healthy, if Bruce Pearl you know, if what he says is accurate, that they are just as fast a team up and down the floor with a big guy in the middle.
Alabama opens up against Southern at 7 o'clock. Mercer and UAB down at Bartow at 7 o'clock. Samford at home against North Alabama at 6:30 tonight. That's part of your basketball slate that's happening this evening. Matt, quickly, LT, not too quickly, but you were out yesterday because you went down to New Orleans to see your Rams play the Saints in a game that you told us a month ago you were going to and that the Rams would lose, and they did. But as I watched that game, and it was thoroughly entertaining, there was one moment I said, oh, the Rams have a chance of winning this one. I bet Lance is excited.
Well, you know, when they're down 21 and able to come back in that atmosphere and tie that game up. Yeah, in the second half, once the Rams tied the game up, I thought the Rams were going to win. Going into the game, didn't feel good about it. And I still lean Saints are the better team right now. But I think home field advantage is going to be so important when it comes to the NFC playoffs this year. I just, you know, and I know Dez Bryant's visiting today. They need another weapon outside of Michael Thomas. Now, they've got him in the backfield when you look at Kamara and you look at Mark Ingram. And then, obviously, you've got one of the great quarterbacks in Drew Brees. But they really don't have a go-to guy outside of Michael Thomas. So you wonder, once you get to the postseason, if Michael Thomas is a guy that can carry them, and their defense is still questionable. But it was a really, really good atmosphere. It was a really loud atmosphere. But I had a good time.
Scoobs on a cell phone throwing out the first pitch today. Hey, Scoobs, how are you, man?
Doing well. How are you guys?
Great, thank you.
I just wanted to get into a little bit of stuff this morning. Nothing too major. I hope you guys had an excellent weekend and a good start to the Monday.
Yeah.
Let's see here. So, I guess
what's he talking about? What are you talking about, Scoobs?
It's Tuesday, Scoobs.
I know, but I'm saying I hope you had a good overall weekend, because, see, yesterday I was kind of hot and I went right into it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. All right. So, pleasantries right. Today. Thank you.
Looking forward to the Monday night game tonight.
So, I was wanting to get into some stuff. Did y'all see where the comments were made by Tuberville yesterday on Paul Feinbaum?
We got them. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, I don't know, man. I kind of want to talk about this for a few seconds. I'm sick and tired of all the Bama hate. I mean, every single day you get Bama hate, Bama privilege, Bama, we don't want to watch this game, Bama's got this player, Bama's got this class. Like, the Patriots are excellent, have maintained their excellence. The Warriors are excellent, have maintained their excellence. I mean, over time, there are teams that maintain and have a good run, and it is what it is. But to come out and say that games are just boring, you don't want to watch, it's almost like a pout. You know what I'm saying? Look, don't frown. If you want to be better, then get better. Get better players. Get a better coach. Find a way to win. Alabama's beatable. They're not just some team that can never be beat. But I guess what I'm saying is I'm tired of the crying, the lagging, the whining. Because what it all boils down to at the end of the day, guys, is mediocrity is what other teams have become right now, and they hate on excellence. Mediocrity will also attack excellence. People will always covet what you want. Bye. Have a roll tide.
But it's humanistic, fellas. I mean, people hate the Warriors right now. People hate the Patriots, the example that he's getting or giving. And, you know, I did a hit in New Orleans this past week with one of the hosts over there, and he was asking me, how bored are Alabama fans? And I was like, well, I think there is, you know, a part of that fan base that probably gets a little bored, you know, going into a game knowing that you're going to win that game week in, week out. But I equate it back when I, you know, was watching Lakers games, 82 games a year, when Kobe and Shaq were playing together, and you knew that they were going to win a championship, three consecutive. It did get a little boring for me. But you would rather have that than the alternative, which is what's going on in the majority of the SEC right now.
I think, though, no, there's no doubt about that, but I think the highest compliment you can be paid is you're the hated team. I think that's who you want
to
be.
It's mind-boggling to me that fans don't understand that. The players understand it, Brown.
They embrace it.
The players understand it. If you're a fan, listen to your players. Here's Xavier McKinney, who's asked the question, do you guys mind being hated? Do you even like being the most hated team in college football and one of the most hated team in sports? Guess what the answer is. Here's Xavier McKinney.
Y'all, I embrace that a little bit, knowing that just make college football hate you a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, we like being a hated team. I know I do. I don't think it affects us. It makes us play better. It makes us perform well. So we try to keep that mindset, and we like the negative energy that we get, and we turn it into positive.
Yeah, they love it. You know why? Because that means they're the team. The Patriots are the team. People hate the Patriots. People hate the Warriors. You either love them or you hate them.
It's the greatest compliment you could have. Gary Danielson said, and Dunaway, you were at the game, so you didn't hear this, and I don't know if Lance was in a situation where he could hear Gary down in New Orleans, but Gary Danielson said this in the telecast of the Bama-LSU game, that Alabama is now a team that plays with arrogance. He goes, they're an arrogant, they are a team that plays with arrogance. And he meant this as a compliment. He's not, you know, it wasn't normally when you say somebody's arrogant, it's a insult, but he meant it as a compliment. And he said, he compared them to these two teams. He said, the only two teams I can remember that played with this level of arrogance is the vintage Miami teams and the USC teams under Pete Carroll. Those are the two he compared Alabama to. He said, they now play with that type of arrogance. And what he meant by that was, they come in knowing they're good, and they're going to show you how good they are.
You know, the difference, though, is we're seeing a championship at least every other year with this. And again, as good as Pete Carroll had the thing dialed in, that's still a program that only won two national championships under Pete Carroll. And, you know, Miami a little bit more success, but this is even up above that to me. But I get what he's coming with.
Yeah.
I mean, Miami really had that chip on their shoulder, and that was really, really a hated program for a long time.
Now they played with a different type of arrogance because Miami, they brought a lot of personal fouls with them and some unsportsmanlikes, and you don't see that at a Saban's team.
Well, you had one with Irv Smith.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know what I'm saying. The celebratory, you know, gunning people down and stuff like that. You're not going to see that out of this, but what I think Danielson meant, I'm not trying to put words in his mouth, but I think what he was saying was they play an arrogant brand in that they come in knowing they're good. They know they're good. They embrace that they're good. And they come in wanting to show you just how good they are. And the minute you start to doubt them, like maybe some people had Saturday night, they want to make you pay for it.
Speaking of paying for it, it was the toughest defense to date that Alabama had played against LSU. 29 points was the lowest point total. And you wondered if Tua Tagovailoa's Heisman campaign took a hit. New odds out yesterday. It did not.
Negative.
No, they took it off the board last week.
Tua 1-10 now.
Yeah, you'll still see that number, but there are a lot of shops that have closed this down. Like you can't wager on that.
You can't
now.
Bet on it.
So 1-10.
Yeah.
That's got to be as high as
as I've ever seen it.
In the Heisman race, right?
Yeah.
1-10 for Tua. Kyler is next. Kyler Murray 6-1. Dwayne Haskins and Shea Patterson are 14-1. Will Greer is 18-1. That's all as far as we need to go. But Tua coming off his most pedestrian game of his career, basically, and the odds are they keep ballooning. Everyone's just like, this is the guy.
Yeah, but I think even those pedestrian numbers that you mentioned, I think 99% of quarterbacks probably would take right at 300 yards with a couple of touchdowns and one pick in that environment.
Well, yeah. I meant pedestrian by his standards.
Oh, you're right. Still really good numbers on the road against that Aranda defense. But yeah, by Tua standards, very pedestrian. But overall, when you still look at the numbers, I mean, just it's amazing, mind-boggling numbers right now for Tua, especially the fact that we well documented going into last week hadn't played into the fourth quarter.
One thing, and now he is 1-1 in the fourth quarter, passing. One thing that jumped out at me was, and I never thought he factored into this, but I at least thought Gardner Minshew might start to get some mentions. I didn't even see his name listed. I don't know where he is. I mean, I didn't think he was going to win by any stretch, but I thought, you know, he's having a really nice year for a surprisingly good Wazoo team. I thought you might at least see him in the odds.
Well, you know, we've got upset alert coming up. I think Washington State's got some games that are going to be interesting. I mean, Minshew still put up good numbers, but again, one touchdown, one interception this past week.
Yeah, I mean, he was pretty average this week. I was just thinking the way Washington State's playing, and he's a heck of a story, Gardner Minshew. This was a guy that was going to be content being basically a graduate assistant at Alabama.
But if he wins out, he'll be there. I mean,
you think so?
Yeah, if Washington State wins out, you know, if they went on the road this week against Colorado, whoever they match up with, and yeah, obviously they got to beat Washington, whoever they would match up with in Pac-12 championship game, which, boy, I tell you what, it's going to be at least
three losses. It's going to be Coach Herm.
It could be.
I know.
They control their own destiny. Arizona State does. And the selection shows tonight a little bit later on. Nick Fitzgerald's the quarterback coming in to play Alabama this week. A little bit more productivity on his resume than what you've gotten from Joe Burrow over the years. Big interesting story yesterday down in Baton Rouge was the discussion on whether it's time to move past Joe Burrow back to Miles Brennan. Coach Orgeron said, nope, still Joe Burrow's the guy, but Brennan's ready to play if we need him. but they're not making the switch. They're going to hold with Joe Burrow, as they should, right?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to... I mean, look, Burrow's numbers were about what Burrow numbers are. They're right around 50%. He did make a mistake there. They weren't great, but this is kind of what you expected against this Alabama defense.
Yeah, I think the difference was Alabama didn't let them run the ball. They've been able to run the ball on most anyone they've played, and even Burrow, too, running the ball. And Alabama just didn't let them do that. So I'm with you. Burrow passing wasn't really the issue.
Well, look, and Burrow should be able to get them home. I mean, they're sitting at 7-2. When you look at these remaining three games,
shoot, yeah.
You know, Arkansas could be a little tricky.
Really?
They're still going to win. Well, it could be. I mean, I still think they win the game. Fayetteville on a Saturday night's a little different now than it used to be. Obviously, they'll roll past Rice, and then at A&M, I don't even know what you guys talked about yesterday with A&M, but that was just completely pathetic in the fourth quarter.
We talked about some of that, yes.
We'll talk about things we got wrong, crap we got wrong when we come back. Willie Taggart may have decided something he got wrong, play calling. He decided he wasn't going to call plays last week against NC State. They lost anyway. OC Walt Bell called the plays, but he says he's going to continue to be the head coach and look at big picture and let Walt Bell be the play caller down the stretch here for Florida State. All Florida State ends with is Notre Dame on the road, Boston College, and Florida, all nationally ranked teams.
I mean, there's really, look, and I understand those two final games against BC and Florida are in Tallahassee. I don't see any more wins, though.
No, it's three losses right there.
Yeah, may get one, but that looks like that bowl streak. Hard to get two. Won't get three, and that bowl streak's definitely in jeopardy. Monday to Tuesday is a transition from one football weekend, and now with the action tonight, the start of a new football weekend. And with that, we look back at things we didn't get right.
Let's face it. We got a lot of things right this season.
Touchdown!
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Pick six! Pick six!
But we also got a couple things wrong, too.
Pass deflected, and it's picked off!
See you later!
Oh!
Our bad.
I just saw magic.
Time now for Crap We Got Wrong.
At 6:34, I'll start us off. I thought Houston would not lose again. I thought Houston would be the team that would end up beating UCF. I have a feeling now UCF ain't going to lose. And Houston got beat this past weekend by SMU 45-31. That's crap I got wrong.
I was right there with you. I mean, I'm blown away. And again, in Major Applewhite, we trusted, which was probably our big mistake. But King had looked so good offensively, and I just didn't think there was any way SMU would be able to stop that offense. Obviously, the big thing that I preached all week, and sometimes just I don't factor in logic. And the logic was Georgia's a much better team with much better athletes than Kentucky. But I thought it was like a perfect storm for Kentucky, and I thought Snell would have a big game and go over 100 yards, and he was limited to 73. And, you know, Terry Wilson didn't play bad, but Georgia just outclassed Kentucky. And I still don't think Georgia's an elite team. I think they're really, really good guys. I don't think they're an elite team. I don't think they'll be able to hang with Alabama in a few weeks. But, what I saw in Kentucky, I have no idea.
Brown made a good point about Terry Wilson yesterday with his numbers. If you'd asked Kentucky fans before the game, those are Terry Wilson's numbers, you'd almost guarantee a victory.
Well, let me ask you this, Lance, because you predicted Kentucky would win the game. If I had told you, Lance, I've traveled from the future, here's Terry Wilson's numbers. It's the only thing the gods will allow me to give you. 23 of 29, 226, one touchdown.
No interceptions.
Well, no interceptions. You would have said what?
I would have said Kentucky wins the game.
Of course.
If you would have, you could have added some things on there. If you would have said, here's one of the quarterbacks, Terry Wilson's, to Jake Fromm, who was only 113, half the production, and only a touchdown with no picks. And if you would have told me, you know, turnovers 2-2, that's not that bad. The thing that really jumped out was the rushing yards, though. When Georgia goes 331, Kentucky goes 84. But, yeah, if you would have told me Terry Wilson's numbers before, I would have felt even better.
I know. That's what's baffling. They just couldn't run the football.
So Kentucky beating Georgia is one thing that Lance got wrong. Give me something else you got wrong this weekend.
Missouri, Florida. I mean, when that line came out and Missouri was a 5-point dog, Dunaway is shaking his head because you had this game pegged, right? Knew Missouri was going to win 38-17.
Well,
they destroyed Florida
right out of the gate. I was like, how in the world?
I know, but even you thought, okay, well, maybe Missouri wins 38-17. Yeah. Well, they embarrassed Florida.
We know the offense is different with Emmanuel Hall back in that offense for Drew Locke. But what really blew me away was you still don't feel good about Missouri's defense.
Oh, no.
And for Felipe to be benched in the third quarter, for Florida to be 3 of 15 on third downs, I mean, it was just an awful offensive performance for the Gators.
Another thing I got wrong this past weekend, it wasn't on the air, but it was by myself in a car making my way over to Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge.
You just said it aloud?
I did. I said, going to the fourth quarter of the Texas A&M Auburn game, I said, well, Auburn's lost this game. They're not going to come back and win this game.
I don't think you were alone in that one, Jimmy.
I really thought that was going to happen, and I was wrong about that. Auburn rallied and won that game, and I think that gets us – I think this is an opportunity Brown wants to step forward and admit that he got something majorly wrong about a coach in the SEC.
Oh, just Brown? You're not going to jump in with this one, too?
No, I'm not giving up. I think he still will win a championship at some point.
That was not
look again. I know his recruiting is interesting right now in College Station, and if you get the right athletes, that sometimes can equate to championships.
Okay,
based on what I saw this past Saturday, Brown. Wow, you lose that game is impossible.
Let me just say this:
low blood sugar is what I'm saying. Jimbo Fisher had in the fourth quarter.
Let me just say this: I still think Jimbo Fisher is a good coach. I thought Jimbo Fisher could be. I thought he could maintain being an elite coach at Florida State, and then I thought. There is a possibility, it would have been a low probability, but a possibility he could reach elite level at Texas A&M. I thought he's going to have all the resources, the recruiting, all that at A&M, all the money in the world behind him. Man, that was amazing in the fourth quarter. And credit, again, I'll say this, so Auburn fans don't think I'm just saying he gave you the game. Auburn had to make him pay, and they did. That's a credit to Auburn. Igbinoghene picked the ball off. Stidham led two scoring drives. Auburn made him pay. So
why was the ball thrown, though?
But why Jimbo Fisher was throwing the ball at the end of that game, I'll never understand.
And
that is so
was
crazy.
Having such I know. A good game. And, you know, I had lunch with an Auburn fan before the Rams and Saints. And that's all he talked about. He didn't want to talk about anything else from the day before. Didn't want to talk about the trip. Didn't want to talk about the Saints-Rams game. Wanted to talk about how does Jimbo Fisher let Gus off the hook? Because he's one of those fans now that, and you can call him not true fans or whatever. He's an Auburn grad, but, you know, it was to the point where I don't want Gus winning anymore because I want Gus out. And for Gus to be given what he was given by Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah, I mean, it was baffling to watch because, see, now that comeback, and I'll credit Auburn fans. They're smart football fans. That comeback didn't cover up Auburn's deficiencies in that game. Auburn fans calling this show yesterday, tweeting to us, and even over the weekend, they still realize that game exposed a lot of deficiencies. And to me, Lance, the most concerning deficiency for Auburn going forward was what you just mentioned. It's not that they couldn't run the ball. I expected that with Whitlow out. I didn't think they were going to be able to run the ball. But, and I know Whitlow played, but boy, he's a shell. Their inability to stop the run has to scare Auburn fans to death with the two conference teams they've got left. Those are good run teams, man. And Auburn just had really very little answer to Travion Williams running the football.
Another thing I got wrong was I had Penn State making the playoffs. That was long gone for me, but I thought they would be strong down the stretch. They'd finish in the top 10, maybe the top 8, and I had a stake on that. Eventually, that's not going to happen, but I'll hold on to see if the miracle happens down the stretch. But they're 6-3, 3-3 in the league, and they got the old can opened up on them by Michigan this past week.
Well, and you can't, you know, we can make excuses. Saquon Barkley was a special player, and Joe Moorhead's a really good offensive coach. At least he was for Penn State for a couple of years. But when you've got a quarterback like Trace McSorley, who, by the way, is going to become the ultimate, because they'll find another win or two, he'll become the all-time winningest quarterback in Penn State history. You know, his final year, you can't be losing games by 35. I don't care who the competition is. So that was a terrible, terrible loss. Another thing I got wrong, I said UAB would pitch their fourth shutout of the year.
Oh, you barely missed.
I was wrong. Yep. UTSA gets 3 points. This UAB defense, though.
Whew, best in the country right now.
Snuck in a field goal, and UAB now plays this week for the Western Division title. They can lock it up with a couple of games still to play at Legion Field this past weekend. And now I tweeted this out last night. Did you guys notice? And I've always been impressed how the College Football Playoff Committee updates the little bracket possibilities. They start flipping teams' names a lot through the promos. And one of the names that flipped up there last night was UAB in the promo. We'll retweet it from the Roundtable account in a second. But that means that they're in the conversation for, I mean, read into it what you want. That means they're in the conversation for being in the top 25 tonight on the College Football Selection Show which opens up the door, a door of great possibilities.
People forget this. UAB was once ranked in the BCS top 25.
Yeah.
Under Watson Brown. So they've scratched the surface of this before, but if they're ranked in the playoff committee's top 25, that is just, that's really unbelievable. Did you see, though, their bracket when it popped up, who it was? It would be UAB playing Georgia Southern. The winner would get the winner of Utah State Northwestern.
Yeah.
I will bet my life we never see that Final Four college football, but it was really cool seeing UAB's name pop up there in that commercial. I had seen it before you tweeted it because it was airing like every break during Monday Night Football, and I was like, wait a minute, did UAB just pop up there? So yes, I rewound it, and I was like, oh, they did.
Yes,
they did. Good for them. That's pretty cool. If they're in the top 25 tonight, that's amazing.
Yeah, and again, on the selection thing, we'll do ours later in the show, but I do think Auburn is back into the top 25 as they fill the bottom of that bracket like they always do to support things at the top. And I think that would be something that would help Georgia and Alabama's schedule, having Auburn back into the top 25.
My last crap I got wrong, and it's a broad and a narrow. The broad is, we as a show, I think, had Miami ranked in the top 10 maybe in our show poll.
We had them number 10 preseason rankings, yes.
And even last week when they were 5-3 and we discussed Miami, I said, well, look, guys, they're 5-3, but they got a good chance to win the remainder of their games and finish with a 9-3 record. And they turn right around and lose 20-12 to Duke. They're not a good football team right now.
You realize they're an underdog this week to Georgia Tech?
You could see that.
So it's on the road in Atlanta, I believe, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, they may not win again and may not make a bowl game too. That's why I asked the question last week, is the shine off Mark Richt, and what can he really do with that program? He had the momentum going, and now he's lost that this year, and you wonder if he can recreate that again down in Miami.
I mean, I don't know.
Maybe you only get one bite at an apple of having that kind of momentum again.
I mean, they're at Virginia Tech. They're at Georgia Tech this week, at Virginia Tech next week, and at Pitt. And they host Pitt, and Pitt and Virginia Tech are playing to try to get in the ACC championship game.
Yeah, I could see them win 2 of 3, but that's probably just based, again, on what we saw last year and all of these guys coming back, and you just still believe Miami's a really, really solid team. Another thing that I got wrong, thought Texas would bounce back against West Virginia and a heck of a finish there for the Mountaineers and Will Grier. But I was a little surprised that Texas blew that lead.
Benny writes in, I got wrong the fact that I thought Florida was good enough to beat Georgia. They're not even good enough to beat Missouri. My bad.
Got blown off the field by Missouri.
Yeah. One of our listeners, Trophy, heard us talking about back in the summer going to Australia. So he had to go there for business and kept us updated on the travel. And he had a running clock on the moment he left Birmingham before he got to Australia.
I cannot imagine this.
And he was sending it to me along the way at 10 hours, at 12 hours. And from time leaving house to a hotel, 33 hours, 40 minutes, 16 seconds.
No, couldn't do it.
I mean, Australia, I'd like to go there. And I'm sure it's a beautiful land. I don't know that I can do that. 33 straight hours of travel would, I mean, once you get there, you got to stay there 2 weeks just to make that worth it, I think.
And then when you get back, you just don't even feel normal.
Yeah.
That's what I texted him. I said, so when do you come back? Do you even unpack? Are you going back to the airport right now? After 33 hours, it's time to come back?
I mean, seriously, if you knew that you're going to take a trip that's going to require 66 hours of travel.
No thanks. You know, I told you guys, I finally have faced my New Orleans mortality, I think.
Right, you're done there?
After this weekend. Well, I just think three nights is too much.
Can we update people that LT has gone to Vegas and now New Orleans, and it's becoming a tradition when he comes back that I don't know if I'll ever go back to that city.
Well, it's a little hard on the body. But the last two times to Vegas, and you know, Vegas is not, I'm not going to say it's a difficult trip, but you know, it's a good 4-hour flight. But the last two times I've booked 3-day trips, and on that third day I've booked a flight home. So I haven't made it the 3 full days, the last two Vegas trips. And I don't know if I can do 3 nights in New Orleans again after these 3 passes.
What is up next? What city do you think you'll mark off next?
Chicago gets pretty rough.
I was
going to
say
me.
Chicago.
Yeah. You go hard in Atlanta sometimes. Can you do 3 in Atlanta?
I don't know.
SEC Media Days. You were wore out over at SEC Media Days.
Well, it was a little different because we have to get up so early to do the show.
Well, that's not going away, man. Yeah. Contractually, I'm told this isn't going away for a while.
Got a little thing on a national championship to cover.
I know. That's in Santa Clara.
Yeah.
You've never marked that one off.
Do the show at 2 a.m.
Yep.
No, I mean, out there, those. So the show would actually go off at 4 a.m. We would be getting up around 2 a.m.
Yep.
Or I guess not going to sleep at 2 a.m.
I don't know what we'll be doing.
I think that's a better way to play it if we end up there is to Mm-mm. Just stay up all night and do the show and then go to sleep.
Yeah, I think that would work one night.
Yeah,
one time.
I would say that is not the way to play it.
I think my inbox would be full.
Anyway, so New Orleans was hard, and you wouldn't go to Australia for 33, say.
I know I'd have to stay 2 weeks.
You wouldn't go to New Orleans again. Sounds like we're getting old.
Yeah, well, that happens.
I mean, do you not agree, though, if it took 66 hours round trip, I mean, that's the better part of 3 days. You've got to stay 2 weeks to make that worth it.
Right. That's one of the great things about, a lot of people love to travel, and I think traveling is awesome. But there's a lot of great destinations that you don't have to go 23 to 33 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, you can actually go to somewhere in the Caribbean, and it's only going to take you a half a day.
But there is ways to travel to the great city of New Orleans and Las Vegas and it not wear you out as much.
Yeah, but those are different, though. But
yeah, some people have discipline. Yes.
Deb says the hubby's traveling to and back Monday through Friday to Dubai. Going there and back Monday through Friday.
I mean, I don't know what kind of trip that is.
Deb, write us back. How long is that compared to Australia at 33 hours?
But see, here's the thing. If I knew I only had a week in Australia, I don't know when I would start dreading the trip back. You know, that dominates some of your mind. Like, at some point, you can't even enjoy the trip because you're already like, oh, I got 33 hours of travel to get back to Birmingham.
Listen, I don't like people that watch TV shows after the main part of society watches it and then tries to talk to you about it.
Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
What did you watch last night?
That tries to talk to you about it like it's going on in real time.
Sure,
with everyone else.
It's like if you were watching Game of Thrones right now from the start, right.
But unbelievable it would be to jump on a plane for 33 hours and just jump into season 4 where I am on Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
Just watch that over and over until I land.
Like if you had it downloaded on your iPad an entire season, you could easily knock it out in 33 hours of travel.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought of that. It'd make time pass.
I would take your time, though, because, you know, I read a big article on Game of Thrones' final 6 episodes. It's not going to be until April of 19. At least that's what they're projecting. So you got plenty of time.
You think he's going to stick with this? Please. Dunaway's the king of starting. He's the king of starting stuff and not finishing it.
I just finished episode 1, season 4 now. I've come back from the other side of the wall.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for him now. I mean, he's too deep into this.
I've hated and fallen back in love with certain characters now. I'm all in. But none of you care because you've already all seen it. Last night on Monday Night Football, it was the Titans beating the Cowboys 28-14. Amari Cooper did play for the Cowboys. 5 catches, 58 yards, and 1 touchdown in a losing effort there for them. Basketball cranks up tonight. More on that in a second. But in college football, Nick Saban yesterday talked about this team and their internal clock having to put the big win over LSU behind them pretty quickly with Mississippi State coming up.
The battle becomes, you know, very internal in terms of putting the last game behind you and looking forward to the challenges and the tests of the future. So you can't really be complacent or satisfied. We got to put that behind us and, you know, get ready for the next team, Mississippi State, who is a very good team.
More on that matchup in a second with Matt Wyatt. Meanwhile, UAB awaiting the College Football Selection Committee's weekly ranking show tonight between 2 big basketball games to see if UAB gets into the bottom half of the top 25 or what kind of consideration they get. And they got a chance, UAB does this weekend, to clinch their division at home against Southern Miss. Here's Bill Clark on handling all that outside noise.
And there is a balancing act. You know, when you're an ultimate competitor, you don't enjoy this. I mean, AJ, you know, I mean, I know him. I know how he is. And when we got senior night coming up, he's going to want to play. So we're just going to have to see. But both of them have got the right attitude, and they want to do what's best for us to win and get to a championship game. So I like where we are with them, and then we'll just see how the week goes.
And that's talking about Tyler Johnson, who came in, got his first start, and led the team to a big win over Texas San Antonio. So 2 quarterbacks now for UAB. Upset alert time. We do it every Tuesday. If you hear sirens here, hopefully it doesn't sound like a police car behind you. But you never know, right? It may. We have different forms of sirens that will let you know that we think one football team could be on the verge of being upset this weekend. It's brought to you by our friends at Baumhauer's Rockstar.
It's the Baumhauer's Victory Grill Spotlight.
College football upset alert.
All right, start us off, Brandy. Who do you have?
I'm going to go to the Big Ten. I did not think this game would lack as much meaning as it lacks when we talked about it in the preseason. But Wisconsin is at Penn State, and Penn State is a team that is just really struggling right now. And they just got their eyes beat shut by Michigan. Penn State is a team that is 3-3 in conference play, 3-3. Wisconsin probably has to win this game to have hopes of winning their division, which is exactly what I think they will do. Penn State is favored by a touchdown in this game. That's 7 points, Rockstar. But
you don't need those points.
You don't, not one point.
I don't think any of these upsets Browns ever needed a point.
I like to call them straight out, Rockstar. I like to give the listeners a straight out upset. You get it this week. Wisconsin beats Penn State in Happy Valley. Straight up, forget the 7 points.
What about you, LT?
I'm going out to the Pac-12, and you look at Washington State, and everything is in front of them. If they win out, not only will they win the Pac-12 championship, there's a good chance, or an outside shot, I should say, of getting to a college football playoff with only one loss. They're taking on a Colorado team that has lost 4 consecutive games. One of the reasons, sophomore wide receiver Laviska Shenault has been out the last 4 games. The offense is totally different with Shenault in there, and he posted last night on Twitter the return of 2 Live. Now, Mike McIntyre, the coach, is saying he's a little more pessimistic about him coming back. But I think Shenault will be back in this lineup, and I think Montez to Shenault will be the difference. Got a feeling Washington State goes down in Boulder.
Oh,
it's
no.
Also in Boulder. It's a
altitude game.
Altitude game. So I like Washington State going down. Rockstar, I'm kind of like Brown here. I don't think you need the points.
Oh, yeah.
You don't need them.
That would end it for the Pac-12 as it pertains. If they're not already dead in the college football playoff race, that loss right there would go ahead and put the bullet in them. I don't think you can recover from that one.
Keep an eye on the Southern Miss UAB game. That's all I'm saying.
I did think about that. I'm not going to pull the trigger
on an upset alert. Keep an eye. Tougher than expected.
Well, yeah. And I think
closer than the experts think.
If you put Erdley back in that lineup, which is really, really dicey right now with the way the offense played last week, I think it could get interesting.
Yeah, so a lot on the line. Want to see how the team handles that, but I'm not gonna put UAB on upset alert.
Okay.
Here. I'm going to go with...
You didn't want the Twitter backlash.
No. I don't want to jinx them, so I'm not going to mention UAB at all.
Well, I think the opposite would be
true. You just mentioned 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, not going to do it. I'm going to go with the Florida Gators getting upset. You're not going to need the points in the swamp again this week after getting roasted by Missouri. Here comes South Carolina with an offense that seems to be finding its stride. Ole Miss made them look really good this past week as South Carolina beat Ole Miss 48-44. I think Florida's quarterback issues and still reeling from the Georgia loss. Bad loss last week to Missouri. I think it continues this week against South Carolina, who really hasn't had a win you can sink your teeth into this year. You know what I mean? And I think they get one this week. I think this will be one that Will is pretty happy about when it's all said and done. Give me South Carolina the points. Don't need them. South Carolina beats Florida straight up this weekend in Gainesville.
You know what? It's weird. It's hard to remember that South Carolina actually finished second in the East last year. Georgia was so dominant in the East last year. It's hard to remember South Carolina finished second. If they win this game, they've got an outside chance of finishing tied for second again in the Southeastern Conference Eastern Division. Now, some of that depends on what Kentucky does down the stretch. If they could stick to the landing, they'll be second. But South Carolina's right in the mix to finish second again. And we kind of put that as a feather in Will Muschamp's hat last year that he did it. He's got a shot at doing it again, even though I think everybody would say this has been overall a little bit of a disappointing season for South Carolina.
Very, very average.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens in those upset alerts. They're brought to you every Tuesday by our friends at Baumhauer. Michael writes in and says, "Hey, Dunaway, need your opinion. You guys used to give LT a hard time about being the Arkansas. We actually called him the Lancasaw Taylorbacks.
I think it was the Ark and Lance Taylorbacks.
Ark and Lance Taylorbacks. But he wants to know now if it's the Wisconsin Browngers, because he's always talking about the Badgers. That Brownie's always talking about the
disappointing team. I had them in the college football playoff this year. The Badgers. They've been wholly disappointing.
But you've gotten so far away from calling them whiskey all the time.
They don't. This team has not earned that moniker, Jim. They don't get their stripe.
I feel really good that I'm going to get 3 of the 4 teams in the college football playoff, because I think there are 3 that are bookable right now, and I had 3 of those. But I think we all got one really, really wrong.
There's no doubt.
I got 2 really, really wrong. Texas and Penn State.
Yeah, because I had Stanford.
Yeah, that's really bad. Stacy confirming for me, it was the University of Nebraska from Lincoln, that very first game with UAB back in 1978, starting their basketball program. 40 years, the 40th season tips off tonight. They lost that game in front of 14,800.
Well, that's an impressive first crowd. They had people fired up, didn't they?
They did. But
the crowd fell the next game, though. Did you see the difference?
Yeah. I mean, it went to some normal, but you still, like, Jacksonville had over 8,000 fans, which would basically sell out Bartow Arena. But you guys, back in the day, you just go to the 1979 season when they became an NCAA tournament team. You know, you started consistently getting 10,000, 8,000 people inside the BJCC.
Those are big numbers.
Yeah. So for basketball, those were huge numbers back in the day. And you'd sell it out. You'd sell that place out for UAB basketball games back in the very early 80s, often, a couple times a year. Pierre's on a cell phone next with us. Pierre, man, how is your football season going?
That's the frustration of being a Auburn and a Jacksonville Jags fan in 2008.
Oof, yeah.
High expectations, very porous results. Very porous results. And can I take a minute to kind of get it out?
Sure. Just vent. Okay. Vent. Pretend we're your psychiatrist.
Delilah.
Yes, we're Delilah.
Thank you, doctor. I'm going to lay back.
Okay, go.
For a second. All right. So this is the biggest issue that I have with Auburn as a whole. And it's not even the biggest issue. There's several issues. But there's no reason for this team to be 6-3 right now. I think it was such a mismanaged season this year from an offensive standpoint, and it is glaring. And I'm not, of course, I wouldn't ask for a coach to be fired, because that's not what, you know, whatever. But it was such a poorly mismanaged season. You watch football just like I do, right? All of us do. When the springtime, when the season was over last year, and you know you're losing your best two running backs, your four offensive linemen, if I'm a coach, I look at my team, and I know my best two players on offense. Who's my best player coming back from Auburn?
Jared Stidham and probably Ryan Davis.
Ryan Davis.
Yep.
Exactly. So I've got a passing team, because if it's not them, then Darius Slayton coming back, Nate Craig Myers. It's my wide receivers. It's my quarterback.
Okay.
I've got to coach my team to be a passing team and set up the run from the pass. Let the run game develop as the season goes, because if I'm looking at this offensive line in the spring, I know they can't run block, because they can't run block my D-line. I know that. So they can't run block anybody else's, I'm sure. But instead of messing your scheme to fit your personnel, you're trying to make the personnel fit into a scheme that doesn't fit them. There's no reason Jared Stidham shouldn't have a 3,500-yard, 25-touchdown season at all. There's no reason Ryan Davis shouldn't average 8 to 10 pad catches a game. There's no reason to line up on first down to run off guard and lose a yard. On second down, everybody knows you're going to throw. You throw the ball 40 yards downfield. And on third down, you throw a screen pass. There's no reason I should know that. That's what's coming. But most importantly, you got these guys that study your film, and they all know what you're doing. They can look at the personnel that you put on the field and know what play is coming. They can look at your patterns, and it's the same pattern over and over and over. Jeremy Pruitt is on the film telling his quarterback, hey, Sam, step up. Step up. It's a screen pass coming your side. And it's a screen pass that came his side. There's no reason that the Texas A&M defensive coaches are sitting in the booth and Brock Hewitt is saying, I don't know if y'all can hear you, but everybody over here is yelling, screen, screen, screen. And it's a screen. The thing that made Gus Malzahn such a great coach was because of his unpredictability, correct?
Yeah, it's gone.
We can sit here and name his passing pattern and his running pattern, I guarantee you I'll get 95 out of 100 right.
Pierre, Pierre, thank you. We got to go. Hey, I mean, I would like to see the breakout of Auburn pass attempts, the percentage that are either a screen or a deep ball. It seems like that's all they throw.
Remind me to get back into what Pierre said coming up at 8 o'clock about adapting personnel to your system or your system adapting to personnel, okay? Because Nick Saban said something about that. It is Selection Tuesday tonight, the college ball rankings. And after another week where Alabama was finally tested and Georgia clocked their ticket, punched their ticket to Atlanta for the SEC championship game, and Michigan made a statement against Penn State, I want to see where everyone is on their top six, and we'd love to hear from you guys as well on Twitter at Jocks Roundtable. LT, start us off. Give us your top four, and then your five and six, the two teams that just missed out.
Well, to me, there's no other way you can do this. Look, I think there are three really, really good teams that I will pencil in the college football playoff, and those three teams are Alabama, Clemson, and Michigan. But because Notre Dame beat Michigan, Notre Dame's going to be number three. So you've got Alabama at one, Clemson at number two, Notre Dame at number three, Michigan at number four. I don't see another way the committee does this.
I would agree with you on that. Who's your five and six?
My five would be Georgia. My six would be Oklahoma. And I think both of those teams are flawed.
Yeah, I'm exactly that way in that order.
I would have Alabama 1, Clemson 2. I would put Michigan 3.
Well, I would too.
I know it would be controversial, but I think Michigan right now is a better team than Notre Dame. Understanding everything anybody can throw at me about them playing head-to-head and all of that,
I agree with you. Michigan is better right now. You play that game 10 times, I think Michigan right now would win 9 of 10.
I would put Notre Dame 4. My 5 would be Georgia. My 6 would be West Virginia. I would have them in front of Oklahoma.
Because of?
I think West Virginia, right? Look, they're going to play. We'll see it. But I think right now, West Virginia is a slightly better team. Oklahoma has no defense whatsoever. And look, they've both had stinkers. I mean, Oklahoma had a stinker against Army. They lost to Texas. West Virginia had a stinker against Iowa State. So they've both thrown up some stinkers. But I think both of those, they're all flawed teams. I agree with Lance. Georgia, Oklahoma, West Virginia, they're all flawed teams. I would just say I think West Virginia right now is slightly better than Oklahoma.
Mine matches LT. What gets interesting to me is what is right after six, the teams that are on the verge of really being in the conversation. I mean, you know, you're an Oklahoma upset in Bedlam or Georgia, you know, getting beat by Auburn, two things that don't seem likely but are very possible happening this weekend of having to start putting teams on the edge ready to step in. Are saying we're not going to have no chaos at all. It's going to be those four teams, Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, and Michigan. But how far did you drop LSU in your mind? Where do they go? Where is UCF? How close is UCF to being really in the conversation? Because now with what I keep seeing with Ohio State's problems as they barely beat Nebraska, with I see Oklahoma's defense, where I see LSU's inability against a good defense to move the football, all of a sudden I'm getting to the point where UCF is very close to being in my top six now. Very close.
They're getting close.
I'd have them at 8 right now.
I'd have UCF in front of Ohio State.
I would too.
I don't know that I'd have them in front of Washington State. That'd be really tough on me.
I do. I think UCF beats Washington State if they play.
Gosh, I mean, some of it would depend on where they play.
I mean, maybe. I mean, but I think Fresno State would beat UCF.
I do, too. I think Fresno State's the better of those two teams. Yeah. That's the tricky thing with UCF.
They get no conversation.
They don't. They don't because they didn't do this last year. I mean, this shows you how much last year matters.
They'll have an opportunity, not that Boise is where they should be with two losses, but a 7-2 Boise team hosting Fresno this week. If they beat Boise on the road, then we'll get a little more conversation.
Friday night game on that one, right? The country will get to watch.
Yeah, which is important as well.
No, I agree completely it is.
You know, I'm also interested, who's higher, LSU or Washington State?
I personally would have LSU ahead of Washington State, even though they're two losses.
I think they will be in front of Washington State.
I think LSU beats Washington State if they played.
I would have LSU and Washington State in front of Ohio State. I mean, I think I would have both those in front of Ohio State. I don't know what I'd do with LSU and Washington State, though. I still think I'd have LSU edged in front of them.
I wrote mine after Oklahoma. I went LSU 7, UCF 8, Ohio State 9, West Virginia 10, Washington State 11.
Boy, you got West Virginia way too low, I think.
You kind of bring this up, Dunaway. You don't foresee the upsets this weekend, But all these top 10 teams are playing teams that they're about a 2 or 3 touchdown favorite over, and they're still playing names where you know there's a lot of athletes. When you've got a Clemson playing a BC, where you've got a Notre Dame playing a Florida State, where you've got a Georgia playing an Auburn, you've got West Virginia playing a TCU.
Oklahoma State.
I mean, there could be 2, even 3 upsets that nobody sees. I don't see them right now. I can't tell you where they are. But you could have 2 or 3. This could be that weekend that you could. Really could throw everything out.
Would you have West Virginia as deep as Jim did? Where'd you have them, Jim? 10th?
I have them 10th.
Gosh. I don't know if I'd have them 10th. I mean, to me, you know, Oklahoma, just based on what Oklahoma's done to West Virginia in the past.
Yeah, but you're not supposed to consider that.
I know. But look, I'm human.
Yeah, but I sit here and I go, if LSU and West Virginia played, who do I think win? I go LSU. If UCF and West Virginia play.
Oh, West Virginia would whip UCF.
I'd go slightly UCF.
No. With that defense, West Virginia would, they'd have 800 yards in that game.
If Ohio State and West, well, I think UCF would have 800 yards.
West Virginia would destroy Ohio State. Ohio State's not a good football team.
Ohio State, West Virginia, I take Ohio State. West Virginia, Washington State, I take West Virginia there.
Yeah. West Virginia would destroy Ohio State and Central Florida. I'd like to see those 2 games.
From what I noticed earlier in the show, when we do crap we got wrong, you do just as much as I do. So maybe I got that one right.
I will be really, really surprised if West Virginia wins out, because I think they beat TCU, but then they've got to go to Oklahoma State, who is so up and down, but in Stillwater, different, and then they got to close with Oklahoma.
I think West Virginia doesn't win out because Dana Holgorsen gets a head cold because he doesn't wear a hat and doesn't cover up his bald head.
It's a bad look. Yeah.
7:46 on the Jocks Roundtable. Love your input on Twitter. Always get that. Brandon writes in, Auburn fans who think you're not a 6-3 team, Bill Parcells says you are what your record says you are. Brandon writing that in real quick. Michael appreciates us reading the tweets on the air. That's what we're here for, Michael. Thank you for listening to the Roundtable.
Beautiful weather out. I'm sure the traffic's tremendous in it, too. And Rockstar is going to cheer you up with something to look forward to tonight when you get home. It's his viewing menu presented by Phone Restore.
Going to see a lot of sticker pictures today. 7 p.m. on IFC. You got The Campaign with Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis.
That's not a bad movie. It's funny.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Your face is full of butt toots. 9 p.m. on AMC, you got Revenge of the Nerds.
Yep.
And then 10:30 on Comedy Central, they're going to do what we call a block of The Office. But at 10:30, they're doing the dinner party episode, which is one of the best episodes. Yep. So the dinner party.
The dinner party at 10:30 tonight.
Yeah, 10:30.
Is that over at Jan's and Michael's?
Jan and Michael's.
Yep. Oh, does she like candles?
She does. It was her escape. She has a workspace and an office.
Still,
you
my favorite
workspace and an office.
Might be the Christmas party where they bring the 2 employees from Benihana.
Benihana Christmas is amazing.
It's mark her arm.
He had to mark her arm.
So good.
Mike writes in. He says he had Clemson, West Virginia, and Alabama in the Final Four to start with, and he had Washington. Guess he picked the wrong Washington, he says. Well, if he had picked Clemson, West Virginia, Alabama, and Washington State, he'd feel pretty good about his picks right now.
He looked like a genius.
But Jason brings up a great point. He says no way West Virginia or Oklahoma is in the playoffs because they're likely going to play each other twice within 8 days, and wouldn't be surprised if he ended up them splitting the games and wiping each other out. So let me ask you, did the Big 12 make a mistake going to this championship game? They were told when it was TCU and Baylor, that's why you're not in.
Yeah, I think they did. I mean, I think they did. I think they should have just stood with their regular season champion and moved on. I don't like the idea of this championship game, because he's exactly right. They tried to fix it by moving Bedlam off the last weekend. And what they've actually done is created a situation where Oklahoma and West Virginia will play in Morgantown and then likely turn right back around and play in Kansas City, or is it Dallas? Wherever it is, they're probably going to play back-to-back weeks, Lance. Well, that's going to be hard for either of those teams to win both games, and that's what you're going to need to happen.
Didn't affect them last year. I mean, you saw what Oklahoma was able to do to TCU in that Big 12 championship game, and if one of these teams is legit, I mean, maybe they split. I still lean that Oklahoma would win these games, but we'll see.
Both of them, back-to-back weeks, that's tough, man.
I think Kyler Murray's that good. Well, Will Greer's pretty good, too.
But it's the defense that worry for both of them that worry me. Neither one of them has a dominant defense. And I think it's a tougher ask, Jim, for Oklahoma to win in Morgantown and then on a neutral site. You get neither game at home. And that's a lot to ask of them.
Najee Harris has an ankle issue. We'll see if he's able to play this week against Mississippi State as they come to town to take on Alabama in a big showdown on CBS this week. Nick Saban, by the way, got his 29th win against LSU this past week. 29th win over a top 10 team. 29 wins
crazy.
Over top 10 teams. passing Bear Bryant by one.
I mean, really, the only thing when it's all done that he will not pass Bryant on is total wins, right?
Will not get total wins. I mean, close I just to that, right? I don't think so. I don't think he's close to that.
I got
to
see how many he's got. But
you think about the opportunities.
323 is the number, right?
He'll have for top 10s coming up because you're going to get Georgia. And then, obviously, once you get into the college football playoff, you'll have back-to-backs.
Yep. So it's a chance for three more this year.
Pretty good.
He's at 227 wins. I mean, he's not going to – he needs 100 more. Could he get 100 more wins?
It takes him about 7 or 8 years.
8 more seasons.
I don't think it's a slam dunk. He can't at least get within shouting distance of that. I mean, he's at 227 right now.
What does Bobby Bowden have? What is the winningest coach of all time?
Well, he's over 400, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get there.
In football, here's David Newton. He covers the Carolina Panthers. He says this about Cam Newton. There's no relation here. David writes for the folks there in Charlotte. Cam's, of course, the quarterback, who was an MVP in 2015. David was asked about this Cam compared to 2015 Cam.
He's playing at a higher level than he was early during that 2015 season. I think his first 7 games back in 2015, he'd thrown 11 touchdowns and had 8 interceptions. And right now, I think it's 8 games. He's at, 15 and 4 interceptions. So he's really doing it well. He did 7 straight games where he's that's a personal best and ties the team record of at least 2 touchdown passes or more. And so that, and he's still running the ball like Cam Newton of old, too. So he's just, with all the weapons around him now, he's just become more efficient. North Turner, what he's done with him has been remarkable.
So Cam Newton in the conversation for the MVP again, like he was back then.
Can I make a point about Cam Newton real quick?
Yes.
If you look at their schedule, their last 3 games are in division, but 2 of the last 3 are against the Saints. They don't play the Saints until the final 3 weeks of the season, which is crazy. I do, too.
I hate that. Why would you put two games in 3 weeks against the same team?
Yeah, so you could really see 3 in about 6 weeks.
I know. And I understand, Jim, they want division games at the end, and I'm all for that. I think that's a good idea, but I don't like seeing 2 out of 3 weeks. But my point there is those games could easily not only determine that division, but determine the overall number one seed, maybe even giving it to L.A., in the NFC, and that Saints game in New Orleans.
By splitting them, you mean it could end up helping the Rams?
Yep. But the last game of the season for Cam and the Panthers is at New Orleans. That could easily be for the NFC South. What a tremendous game that would be.
Yeah. You're the NFL. You're the most consistent things in sports properties, and you can't come up with a better schedule than that?
Yeah, I don't like 2 out of 3 at the end like that. That should be spaced out more, but the way it's going to play out, that is going to be pretty fascinating to see how those games fall.
Let's talk about what Pierre brought up earlier. And if you can remember what he said there, Brown, about Gus Malzahn, players, and Gus's system.
Well, he just basically said that coming into this season, you should have looked at running back and offensive line and known that your best players on offense are Ryan Davis and Jarrett Stidham. And I'll even say, you know, they might have known they had a talent in Seth Williams. I don't know that they knew they had quite that good a talent in Seth Williams.
Darius
He's been
Slayton.
Tremendous.
I mean, you got some talented receivers.
Yeah, Slayton just doesn't catch the deep ball. But other than that, I mean, he made a pretty important catch that went to review. Anyway, all that aside, Pierre's point was you should have looked at it and said, our best two players coming back are Jarrett Stidham and Ryan Davis. We're going to be a passing football team. And that Gus Malzahn, because he's stubborn and wants to run the ball, these are Pierre's words, said, no, we're going to force a square peg in a round hole, and we're going to be a run team with a pass as a compliment.
Now, I want to play for you what Nick Saban was asked yesterday about his philosophy in recruiting and what players he goes after and system and all of that. And then I want you to talk to me about how Nick Saban has changed from 2007 to 2018. But here's Nick Saban yesterday at his news conference.
You know, if we didn't have 3 defensive players that were really good players go out for the draft last year, you know, we might have started out with a little different kind of team. The fact that we have the skilled players that we have on offense. So offensively and defensively, I think you take the players that you have and you try to build the best group that you have you can based on what they're capable of doing. So it wasn't like we went out and said, okay, we want to recruit, you know, this kind of guy so that we can have this kind of team. I think we recruit the best players that we can, and then you mold the team based on their skill set.
Okay, that seems so simple, right? We recruit the best players we can, and then we mold the team by what they can do. And the change that he has made from the pound it, grind it, defensive run football.
It's like a Greenworks commercial.
I get loaded, man.
Loaded, it, lifted, it, pound, and grind.
I hear it so much. That's where it came from.
Yeah.
From 2008 to what you see now is all because of the rules of the game and the personnel he has. Does every coach do that, or do they not? I mean, that's one criticism Gus Malzahn is getting.
Well, it seems like a pretty easy philosophy, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It seems,
I mean, you play to your strengths. I think, obviously, Alabama has more strengths than anyone else, so it would make sense that any direction you play with Alabama. I mean, if Alabama went into Saturday night's game against Mississippi State and said, we're going to run the ball every play, would you still think they win the game?
Yes.
Yes.
Like if they said Tua is not going to throw one single pass.
We're not going to attempt to pass. We're going Army right here.
Yeah, we're going to try to be Army or Georgia Tech.
So, you know, they're a little bit different. But, yeah, I mean, coming into this season, I mean, we believe that Stidham had an opportunity to be one of the better quarterbacks in college football based on where he was last year. But, yeah, I mean, that's an obvious thing. You play to your personnel.
I don't know that every coach does it. I think the good ones obviously do. Like, for instance, I mean, Dabo Swinney, though, this is a bad week to bring this up because I think Lawrence only threw for 77 yards, didn't he? Well, because they ran for $8 million.
Again, didn't matter.
I know.
I mean, ETN only carried the ball like 7 times for 153.
I mean, they had 492 on the ground.
Well, I mean, they were playing Louisville. You got to throw those numbers out. Louisville's awful. But but what I was going to say is, it seems to me, I don't have the numbers to back this up, Clemson's throwing way more than they have in the past with Lawrence.
Well, just since they made the change from Kelly Bryant to Trevor Lawrence, just this year they're playing differently.
Yeah, it feels that way. I'd have to go look at the numbers, but it feels like they've become more of a pass offense. So, I mean, that's an example of a coach saying, yeah, I'd probably like to run the ball, but I'm going to play to my strengths. And Nick Saban has done that on offense, there's no doubt.
But what is that strength right now, though?
For who?
For Auburn.
Well, there isn't one. On offense,
I mean,
there isn't
that's
one.
That's what Pierre was bringing up. I understand it. But based on what I've seen this year, I mean, maybe we were just kind of duped a little bit. Because I really don't know what the strength is right now for this offense.
Like Michigan and Jim Harbaugh. Now, he started out the year trying to be something different.
Well, there's a simple recipe. You're right.
Yeah.
They tried to be something different to start with because they had Shea Patterson. And if they had it to do over again against Notre Dame, they probably would have a different game plan. But they have become what Alabama used to be. They're a run team, power run team with great defense.
And I think they're good enough. Look, if you can slow down Higdon and keep him under 100 yards, obviously Michigan's going to have some problems offensively. But based on where that Don Brown defense is right now, I think they can play with almost anyone in college
but
football.
I feel like Harbaugh, up until maybe this year, has been really stubborn about trying to do it one way, and you don't necessarily have the personnel to do it that way.
Well, right. I think he got what people would say a little cute early on, Dunaway, because I think he believed Shea Patterson was an elite quarterback, and I think Shea Patterson has gotten really comfortable where he is right now, but I don't believe Shea Patterson, against one of these elite teams like a Clemson or Alabama, can beat them by himself. He's got to make some plays, but Higdon's got to be efficient running the football.
You know, another team that has been stubborn, just to make sure this is not a pound on Gus Malzahn segment, is every LSU coach in this Alabama game, when they play Alabama every year, they continue to play it exactly the same way.
It's baffling.
They don't try to do it any differently.
And that's been different offensive coordinators. Yeah. I mean, it was different offensive coordinators under Les Miles, from Greg Coach Stud, that's what they called him, to Matt Canada, and now it's Steve Ensminger, and it's the same game plan over and over and over again. It's like they've got an Alabama binder. And no matter what they've done all year, they go pull the Alabama binder off the shelf and said, here's the game plan we're using. Coach, that hasn't worked since 2010. I know.
Brian Kelly, he's changed the way Notre Dame plays football this year. Well,
he's finally got a proficient passer. He didn't have that.
We didn't talk about this, but an unbelievable interview. We need to pull that back at some point this week. But on game day this past week, an unbelievable interview with Brian Kelly. And one part in there, he was asked, did you ever watch the tape on that 2012 national championship game against Alabama? And he said about 3 or 4 years later, when he was making a change with his offensive philosophy, he went to see that if the change he thought he was going to make was the right change to make. And he said, I went back to look at that game to see what we had to become to compete with the best in college football. He said, not necessarily Alabama, but what the best in college football looks like. And that year, that was Alabama, and it looks to be that way again with Alabama. So he didn't even go back and look at that 2012 tape until 3 or 4 years later, only to know how he needed to change the way they play football in South Bend to compete with the best of the best. The changing that some of these elite coaches, the guys that are in the conversation this year, have done is pretty remarkable, because if you're good at something, rarely do you want to change.
But you've seen Kelly do it in season, because he went from Wimbush, who was a very average passer, if that, to Ian Book, who leads the nation in completion percentage right now. And it's not necessarily dink and dunk. I mean, he's got almost 9 yards per attempt, which is pretty good.
Do you guys think they close the deal, though?
Because I think they're going to lose to Cuse.
You know, I mean, Florida State's not good. I think Syracuse is good. They're not great. And then USC is very, very average. But based on the way they've played the last 3 weeks, I mean, they were lucky to escape Pittsburgh. Navy's an awful team that still had some success in that second half. And then obviously Northwestern, I mean, that was kind of back and forth.
Yeah. If
How good is Notre Dame at stopping the run, though? If you control Dungy running the football for Syracuse, I think you beat Syracuse.
In other words, stopping the quarterback running.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find out where Notre Dame ranks. I was going to give you their national rank. It may take me a second, though. But sometimes that doesn't even show up when it's a rushing quarterback. They're 41st against the rush. They give up 142 a game.
That's problematic.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that puts them just below.
Because you think Syracuse could get them.
I do. It's just a feeling. I mean, it's not necessarily matchup oriented. It's just a feeling that.
Well, I mean, Notre Dame will only be in that game, based on where we are right now, probably a. Is that game in Yankee Stadium?
It's in Yankee Stadium, yeah.
I think Notre Dame will be about an 8-point favorite, 8 or 9.
Yeah, I could see the Cuse beating them. I mean, you got to remember that's a team that was playing Clemson very, very well. Even before they knocked Lawrence out of the game, Clemson had their hands full with Syracuse. They can play some football.
That could be a fun game day sight, Yankee Stadium.
The game's next week, isn't it? Yeah. So it may be. I don't know what else they got next week.
Leonard on a cell phone next with us. Hey, Leonard, what's up, man?
Oh, not much, guys. Y'all hit the nail on the head. As a very frustrated LSU fan for the last, ever since 2011, when the last time we beat Alabama, I mean, it's the same playbook every time. Try to run up the middle on that stout defense every year, and then try to drop back and throw instead of rolling out or doing a pitch or something and splitting the defense a little bit. They just grab the same playbook every year, and it's so frustrating because it's not the same team that played Georgia to me.
Well, ultimately, any of these teams that have beaten Alabama have either had an elite quarterback or they get an elite day out of their quarterback. And, you know, that's just something LSU hasn't been able to do. I mean, for whatever reason, and it's baffling to me, Leonard, that you guys can't get an elite quarterback there. But No quarterback in this run has ever had an elite day against Alabama at LSU, and that's the way you're going to beat them.
That's very true. You know, I mean, the only thing I know, and I've seen him play and everything, and I mean, he hasn't played a whole lot in college. You know, last year he played a little bit, but Miles Brennan can spin a ball, I can promise you that much.
Yeah. Yep. Leonard, thank you. There's talk of him maybe getting more time against Arkansas. I don't think that'll happen.
That's what you heard a lot of. That's what I brought up early in the show. Coach O was asked that in his news conference yesterday, and he said Miles is ready to play, but they're going to ride with Joe Burrow right now.
Are we not all in agreement that Joe Burrow, and look, and I think he's going to be a little different. I think it was kind of Brown said no, Dunaway said yes, and I was in between, but I thought Burrow would be better than Danny Etling, but he looks like not. Danny Etling all over again.
I mean, Luganville said that to us. I don't know if you guys remember, but coming out of the LSU-Mississippi State game, we asked Luganville, and he'll be with us tomorrow, we asked him then, did you see anything that tells you either of these teams can beat Alabama? And he said no. He goes, the thing that baffles me about LSU is they are no different offensively than they were last year under Matt Canada, and nobody's complaining now. But he said they're the same offensive team, and they certainly looked at Saturday night.
Jeff and Aniston is next with us. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man.
Good.
Before I ask you, I'll give y'all a couple opinions. I just think for some reason, but if y'all had to go watch an 80-minute set of these three, which one would y'all go see? Foxworthy, Sinbad, or y'all called Smirnoff?
I would go Sinbad.
Sinbad?
Yeah.
I think I'd go Sinbad. Who I always like because he joined us in studio and was
a lot smaller than you would think, too.
Yeah, smaller than you would think, but I found him an extremely nice guy.
Yeah, really nice guy. And he still, with his clean comedy, can make me laugh every now and then.
Yeah, I'd go Sinbad.
I would go Sinbad as well. I don't know why we're going to comedy clubs in the late 70s and early 80s, but yeah, that's why I would go.
The Foxworthy, you might be a redneck if bit, never did it for me.
hit too close to home for you.
Okay.
How about if I threw Carrot Top in there?
Now, see, I like Carrot Top before he got on the steroids.
Mainstream.
I like the deep cuts.
You know what I liked when I was a kid was Gallagher. When I was a little kid, it used to come on late on Saturday night.
Sledge-O-Matic.
The Sledge-O-Matic. I used to love Gallagher.
But I did, too. But I think that was because cable was so new.
Maybe
right?
So, yeah.
Did he tell jokes, though?
I don't even know.
I used to watch, but we get so excited about him beating up the watermelon.
He told jokes, but the watermelon was always the encore.
Yeah.
Okay, four statements. I want y'all to tell me if I'm right on these or where I'm on.
Okay.
First one is, as good as Alabama has been all year, Saturday I thought they were their most impressive and satisfying game.
They weren't the most impressive they'd been on offense. Easily the most impressive they've been on defense. One of the most impressive defensive performances to me in the Saban era.
No, it was the most satisfying game for me, without a doubt, because everyone in the country was saying Alabama hasn't been tested. Alabama hasn't been tested. So they get tested on the road in that environment, and it's 29-0, and you have people literally leaving at halftime when it's 16-0 saying there's no way that my team, LSU, is going to score on this team, so I'm going to beat the traffic.
Well, there's still some now that say we still haven't played anybody, of course.
You're going to get that all year. Just get ready.
All right, and the six best teams in order as we speak to me is 1A, 1B, Alabama and Clemson, Michigan 3rd, Georgia 4, Oklahoma 5, Notre Dame 6. Best teams.
To me, Jeff, here's where I am on this. I think there are three teams that you can go on and pencil in. I think it's Alabama, Clemson, and Michigan. I understand Michigan's still got Ohio State. Where Michigan is right now, it's not even close. But then there's such a drop-off after three for me. And I think Georgia, Oklahoma, Notre Dame, you play all those teams. I don't know who beats who.
Yeah, I've watched a good bit of Oklahoma. And, Jeff, I know that's kind of your secondary team. Boy, that defense, man.
They're terrible.
Notre Dame would score a lot of points on them.
But Kyler Murray is that good.
Yeah. That defense worries the heck out of me about Oklahoma if I'm an Oklahoma fan. Because they don't get a lot of stops.
Yeah, it's fine. All right, the four best teams in the NFL, in no order, is the Rams, Saints, Patriots, and Chiefs. And I think the next two is Carolina and the Steelers, with the next two being the Chargers and the Falcons. And yes,
yeah, I think your Chargers and your Panthers are too far down. To me, the Panthers are better than both Patriots and Chiefs right now.
Yeah, and I take the Brady factor out. I think the Chargers are the best team in the AFC. I know everyone's crazy about the Chiefs. I think the Chargers.
Really? Better than the Chiefs, huh?
LT's going to. I think when it's all said and done, LT has nailed the Super Bowl with his LA versus LA Super Bowl.
Not happening. All right. And the last one, BC is, to me, the best team on Clemson's schedule. But I think at best, they'd be the fifth best team in three of the other Power Five conferences. You agree with that?
They'd be the fifth best team in the Big Ten,
the
SEC?
SEC, Big Ten, and Big 12. I think at best they'd be the fifth best team. And it's the best team probably Clemson's got.
Yeah, maybe. BC's good. They're not as good as I thought they would be. I thought they'd be actually a little bit better this year.
But do you think there's a possibility of a loss this weekend for LSU? I mean, for Clemson?
No.
No.
No, okay. Because I think
it's real cold and rainy.
Well, if you're Brent Venables, I mean, you stop A.J. Dillon. I don't think Anthony Brown's a quarterback that's going to beat this defense. And again, Trevor Lawrence is, numbers aside last week, because it didn't matter with the 77 they put on Louisville, wasn't really asked to do anything. And I think Lawrence is playing really, really good.
Jeff Goodman, who we really respect on the show, now works with Stadium. It used to be with ESPN. Kentucky 1 in his preseason rankings, Tennessee 9, Auburn 10. In his preseason rankings, right? Auburn 11 in the AP poll as they crank up the season tonight. Down the list for Jeff, by the way, he is Alabama 16.
Ooh.
I know. That's
a little higher than most,
right? That's about higher than most. Yeah. Mississippi State is 18 on his list, also from the SEC in there. And So as basketball season cranks up, it's supposed to be another good year for the Southeastern Conference. That goes tonight, Alabama, Auburn, UAB, all in action this evening. Here is the interview that we had from College Game Day this past Saturday. I wanted you to hear from Brian Kelly. He's talking with Gene Wojnarowski.
Wojciechowski.
Yeah, you know what I was saying.
Yes.
Wojo here talking with the Notre Dame head coach.
Since you were hired in late 2009, Alabama has won 5 national championships. Do you think that's good for college football?
I think you have to look at it from a perspective of, are they doing all the things that everybody else is doing? They are. I mean, they don't cheat. I mean, Nick Saban is an honorable football coach. Their business plan is different than Notre Dame's. But when it comes to football, they do it the right way.
If the playoff stars worked out, would you love to have a rematch against them?
Be careful what you wish for, is what I would say. If they got upset in the first round, I would not be unhappy at all. I'd be okay with that.
I liked his honesty there. If they got upset in the first round, I'll be honest with you. But I like the way he thinks he's not going to be the 4 seed, too, that he's not going to be there. Do you think it was weird that in that question that he asked, that he went out of the way to say Nick Saban's an honorable man and he doesn't cheat?
Yeah, it was. It was interesting, yes. I don't know.
I mean, that was not the question. It just came out of nowhere, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah. Chase from Pelham as we approach the top of the hour. Hey, Chase, how are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, am I the only one that remembers the Auburn-Washington game coming down to a late Washington score that for the first time in recorded history, a pick play was called as defensive pass interference at the end of that game, which negated that score, which kept Auburn from losing that game?
Oh, I mean, that did happen. I can't swear you're the only one that remembers it.
Yeah, does that keep you up at night?
I feel like I'm the only one that remembered that. And, I mean, nobody talks about that was nearly a disastrous start, which was kind of the predecessing omen to the season. And I began to say that at the beginning of the season that Auburn sucks and it's going to be a bad year just from that. They got lucky as hell.
All right.
No, the anger.
Chase with a call from week one.
The anger and the rivalry with the situation Alabama's in right now is still amazing to me.
First down.
Who lasts longer at their current job? Would you go Bobby Petrino or would you go Jason Garrett?
Jason Garrett. I mean, Petrino, there's no way he can survive this year. And Garrett, look, I mean, again, they're in a really weak division. He can still climb back in this thing.
But how do they come back, Brown, from saying we can't afford the buyout?
Oh, the more you lose, the more you realize what you can afford, I think.
Yeah.
I mean they're an awful team.
They're 2-7 and got beat on national TV on ABC.
Got undressed.
77-16.
And Friday night they are at Syracuse. They'll get undressed in that one, too, on a game that's a standalone national TV game.
I know it is easy to dislike Bobby Petrino, but this is only going to be his second losing season in his college career.
Yeah, but you can't survive this one.
I don't know where it came from, how they're this bad, Dunaway, but his buyout actually goes up next year.
It goes up.
They'll find the money now. You can't sit and watch this product and not find the money.
0-6 and a pretty blah average ACC.
Second down.
And they've probably won their last game, by the way. Their next 3, I don't think they'll win.
Who lasts longer right now? Lincoln Riley is Oklahoma's head coach or Dak Prescott is the starting quarterback for the Cowboys?
I don't know where the Cowboys go yet.
Do we think Riley's going to take the Cleveland job?
I mean, I don't. There are people out there. I was talking to people over the weekend that really believe this is going to be the year that he actually is going to follow Baker Mayfield and go to Cleveland. I don't see it.
I mean, just think about it. I mean, that's a young, I think, talented team.
Okay.
So risky.
There's 129 other college coaches, and then there's 32 NFL coaches, right?
Right.
So what's my math there? 161 total coaches. Of the 161 that don't have that Oklahoma job, how many do you think would take that Oklahoma job from where they are right now?
Well, I think, the NFL's weird because
none
some
of
people,
the NFL.
Oh, are you kidding me? You're crazy.
Well, I was going to say, some of those people are just wired to be NFL guys.
Do you think somebody would quit the NFL to come coach Oklahoma?
Yes, absolutely.
Name that guy.
Hugh Jackson.
Hugh Jackson just got quitted.
Okay. Name me a guy who is the head coach in the NFL that would leave and take the Oklahoma job.
I think a lot of guys that know that, A, they're in a bad situation.
But then they're a bad coach.
All right,
first.
Todd Bowles for the Jets. Sean McDermott for the Bills. I'm not certain about Marv Lewis for the Bengals wouldn't do it.
You think those three guys, first of all, they're not college guys. You think those guys would leave and take over the Oklahoma job? No way.
Are you kidding me, Todd Bowles?
It'll never happen because Oklahoma wouldn't be interested in them.
Jim, that's not the question
I asked.
There's
a lot more stability with that Oklahoma job. You know, you mentioned this young roster, and I don't disagree, but would you have told me that Philadelphia is going to be sitting at 4-4? The NFL is just so fickle.
Vance Joseph at Denver?
There isn't more stability if you're losing like those losers Brown keeps saying.
That's why they would take the Oklahoma job today.
It's hard to not go 10-2 at Oklahoma.
The guy at Arizona?
Unless
you're bad.
Yeah.
The guy at Arizona? You tell me you wouldn't get out of that mess to take the Oklahoma job?
I don't think NFL guys think about going to college if you're not college guy.
Well, that's better than being unemployed, which is what most of these guys are about to be.
They won't. They never are, Brown. They end up leaving.
You think Todd Bowles is going to be a head coach again?
They got big money. He'll go back to being a coordinator, and then eventually he'll be a head coach again.
Oof.
That's what usually happens with these guys.
Third down.
Better chance of playing in Dallas in the month of January, the Cowboys or Michigan?
Michigan.
Michigan's going to be a 3 or 4 seed. You know, I can see Michigan, Clemson, and maybe them being in Miami. But I see what you're saying. I'll say Michigan has a better chance.
Yeah, I mean, if Dallas wins the division, they host a playoff game.
Yeah.
No, I don't see it happening, but
I'm going to say Michigan.
I mean, you don't believe in the Redskins, though, do you?
No.
I don't either. And the Eagles.
I made the mistake of believing them this Sunday.
Yeah. No, I believe in the Eagles. Absolutely.
You do at 4-4?
Yeah.
Oof, they seem like they're missing something.
It's a good team.
I don't believe in anybody in that group.
Yeah, I really don't either. Better chance of happening, Carolina actually wins the NFC or Larry Fedora actually survives one more year in Carolina?
Carolina wins the NFC.
Oh, yeah, that's easy, right? Cam is playing good, more than Fedora surviving another year. I mean, that's an off-the-radar disaster, too, isn't it? I mean, 1-7?
I mean, it is.
Yeah, they're bad.
They're one game worse than Louisville in the same conference. Somehow they won a conference game, though they're 1-5. Must have beat Louisville, probably.
So if he's fired, though, he's going to be owed $12 million.
That's a good time to get fired.
And they're talking about if he was to somehow pick up Kelly Bryant and win a game or two down the stretch here, that he could somehow survive based on that buyout.
Boy, these Kelly Bryant sweepstakes. He's been to Arkansas. Now it's North Carolina. He was at Auburn.
You know one thing he's not doing?
Auburn's the best program he's gone to.
Well, he's not taking snaps right now. What else is he not doing?
I guess he doesn't have to go to class. He's done, right?
I guess so. Yeah, he's a graduate.
Would that be fun to be able to just go campus to campus?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he's basically a bad college game day. He's just going to bad spots, primarily North Carolina and Arkansas, places like that.
Some guy in a kazoo. We're coming to your city. Yes. Bad college game day.
Yeah. I mean, that's what he is right now. He's just going to primarily bad spots.
Can I ask you, since you brought that up, I didn't watch game day. So I didn't see this James Corbell. How bad was it?
Well, I didn't see it. I didn't watch game day either.
I heard it at that point. I was in the car.
Apparently, it was the French phrase on his shirt that people are upset about that translated something roughly about what Greg Sankey could do. I think
so that's what it was?
Well, and then he, you know, the things he said,
he
too.
He accused the SEC of colluding, I think is the word he used, over and over.
I was just surprised watching A&M and Auburn, how they break in and they do a public apology to Sankey.
Yeah. Well, it was at halftime, right? They didn't
break in, right? Yeah. It was very awkward.
Yeah. As they pointed out on The Athletic, there really wasn't a crisis until ESPN made it a crisis.
Yeah. I think that made it worse. Once they apologized, what happened, Lance, was a lot of people like you and I who didn't see it now went to see what he actually said once the apology happened.
And he basically suggested there was a conspiracy in the SEC to benefit Alabama, and he started naming some facts that were not 100% true.
Yeah, I mean, it was dumb by Carville, and it was dumb for ESPN to put him on, but it probably, once the game started, I don't think anybody remembered it until ESPN apologized. That made it worse.
Of our last big thing today, and it's brought to you by our friends at eraking.com. Here's Reese Davis on Alabama being the unbeatable giant and what it would take for Alabama to lose.
Anybody can lose. you can turn the ball over five times and lose to anybody. Alabama can lose Saturday to Mississippi State. They can lose to Auburn. But Mississippi State and Auburn can't beat them. They can't line up and just both teams play a good game and then come out on top. Clemson can. And they have the explosive capabilities on offense. Alabama is not going to shut them down. Nobody's going to shut them down.
Okay, so that's Reese Davis. Do you agree? I think I agree that if Mississippi State plays an A-plus game and Alabama plays their A game, no way Mississippi State beats Alabama unless Alabama
Correct.
Is self-inflicted.
Their A-plus game, then they're not self-inflicted. So, right. Yeah.
So A game versus A game.
No way. They lose any game.
Alabama doesn't lose the regular season. A game for Georgia, A game Alabama.
Alabama wins easily.
You agree with that, Lance?
Yeah, I mean, there's no A to A, there's nobody that beats them.
Not even Clemson.
Not even Clemson.
Yep. No.
So if Alabama plays their A game, they're national champion.
Yeah, yeah. There are a couple of teams, if Alabama played a C-plus, B-minus game, and those teams played their A games, and Clemson and Michigan, I think they could beat Alabama.
So Clemson is one of those for you?
Yeah.
I mean, you gave Alabama, what, a C-minus versus an A-plus?
Yeah. Which would be...
That's turnovers is all you can talk about.
Yeah,
that's
turnovers. Minus three in turnovers.
Yeah.
I mean, even this weekend, this is an example. Alabama plays an F, turns it over five times. Mississippi State plays an A, plus five. It'd be tight. Yeah, I don't think Alabama would still lose.
Look back at LSU. Alabama, the turnovers were even. So let's take the Mack Wilson turnover off the board and say LSU scores a touchdown there. So now it's 29-7, right?
Yeah, so now you got a three-touchdown game.
I mean, how many more turnovers would LSU have needed in that game? And listen, I know turnovers, if you turn it over inside your own, inside the opponent's 20, it's going to lead to points. So it depends on where the turnovers
points,
are.
You're not going to turn every turnover into points. So I would go four.
They would have needed four more?
Yeah. As a number three team.
So think about that.
But Clemson's different, right?
Clemson, yeah.
They're a better team, yes.
Clemson's in a different class than even everyone else. There's Alabama. And there's Clemson. Then there's everyone else. I know Dabo wants to say Roy Bussman.
Well, that's Dabo coaching.
So we're at this point. You don't think A game Clemson beats A game Alabama?
I don't.
I agree with
you. I'll say this, though. Clemson, like Alabama, it looks like the defense may be a late start. And I think Nick Saban kind of alluded to that in earlier comments today on the show. And this defense, after what we saw this past week, and we know how good they can be, I think you're seeing that with Clemson's offense now.
Good point.
I want to see that game, though. Both of them playing their A game.
No, you'll see it.
Okay, good.
The housing market is hot. There are three times more buyers than sellers. It's more important now than ever to make sure you have your financing in place before you even find the house. Get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert, LLC.